centre where she helps a varied clientele adapt to a self-supporting life in the community. It's not so far from living with a rock journalist. If I need rousing or cajoling, she has the skill set to do it. "So where did you stay?" she asks, drawing back the curtains. "The Four Seasons," I say. "Toronto." "And the weather?" "Cold as a witch's tit." "But they were nice." "Who? Were the band nice?" I wince at the question. "Nice? Why are you asking me if they were nice?" "You went all that way. I'm just asking if they were nice to you." "Come on," I say. "You don't really want people like that to be nice." Rock stars are combatants in important cultural wars. They are required to be many things, but nice isn't preeminent among them. However, Nicola is less bothered by the complex code of how rock stars should behave than I am. To her mind, they should assume the offstage persona of cordial and respectful citizenry. Nicola is for common decency. She is for manners. "What was Mick like?" she asks with a cautious elevation of one eyebrow. "A businessman, emotionally disconnected from his product, very much focused on maximising profits," I shrug. "Oh," she says with distaste. "I've been to Toronto to interview the Rolling Stones. In his dressing room, Sir Mick directed me to a seat 10 feet distant from his. Across this chasm of empathy, he offered a wily, craggy defence of the Stones' legacy. He's been their frontman for over 40 years now. No wonder he feels more like a brand ambassador discussing augmentations to the product line than a rock star. I went for broke. I lobbed in my hand grenade question. Is it possible, as Keith and I discussed earlier, that the Stones' sexual threat and perhaps even the entire permissive 60s may have originated with your cock? Great quote, no comment. In most interviews, the grenade question, something incendiary dropped onto the floor and left to roll around with a pinout, opens things up. But not this time. He was too good. Nevertheless, eyeballing the walnut-faced Jagger up close was a solemn and special occasion for me. Jagger and Keith Richards are members of the Big Six, the giants, the founders even of modern rock, whom every rock writer would like to interview. The others are Bowie, Townsend, Page, and McCartney. They are getting old now, and soon they will all be dead. It is my sworn aim to find the big beasts before they go extinct, and before I do too. In 6 months, I will be 42. "After the Stones, I expect your feeling tomorrow will be a bit of a come-down," Nicola says. "Tomorrow? What's tomorrow?" "The Q Awards." "Oh, yes, I remember now. Tomorrow, Q Magazine is holding its annual awards bash. Each journalist must chaperone one of the star guests up the red carpet, through a global media maelstrom, and into a hotel ballroom where gongs will be handed out. I have been allotted Britpop Titans Oasis. Oasis are not in the Big Six, but they are still a major force in rock. Just thinking about chaperoning them makes me feel anxious. I've spent quite a bit of time with the band in the past, and although they are funny and charismatic, they can be wildly unpredictable. I think you should get a new suit. And new shoes," Nicola advises after studying my outfit for the awards. "Why? Those are fine." "Come off it," she says. "The shoes are so 1980s and the suit's ridiculously small." "I don't care, I'm wearing them." Last year, as I chaperoned the exquisitely tailored Elton John up the red carpet, one of the magazine's top brass hissed at me coldly. "Why aren't you wearing a suit?" she said. "You look like his bloody roadie." It pisses me off that this year she has stipulated all writers should attend in formal wear. I will wear the ridiculous suit as a protest. A suit that brazenly refuses to do the conformist work of a suit. I do not believe rock writers should conform. Why should we? Mavericks who articulate the voices of the counterculture, ape the dress code of the man. "For God's sake, just go and buy one," says Nicola, holding it up with clear distaste. "There's nothing wrong with looking presentable." I sense we are about to argue once again about the place that conformity has in rock and roll culture. But we are interrupted by a noise outside the bedroom door. The tentative rat-a-tat of a small human knuckle. Nicola winks at me as a cue to prepare myself. "Here's Ronnie," she cries, like an MC introducing an act on an old-time TV rock show, and our 9-year-old son Ronnie shoulders through the door. He is wearing his Who pyjama set with a toy plastic guitar slung round.